RadioInfluence.com.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report Podcast. I am Jason Floyd. He is Daniel Galvan. And this week's episode of the podcast is presented by Roman and DraftKings. Come up here later on in the show. We'll tell you about the great offers that both of those companies have for the MMA Report Podcast listener. We're going to talk about everything that happened last week in MMA. The UFC had an event. Bellator had an event. We're going to preview this weekend's UFC event. Start to look ahead to the season debut of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, which kicks back up next week. I've actually talked to a couple of fighters going to be a part of the episode one, including Dustin Jacoby, a guy that I was a little surprised to see on Contender Series. So I'll tell you a little bit about that conversation. Also, we'll get into everything else going on in the world of mixed martial arts. But Daniel, last week, I'm sitting here in my office, which is basically my third bedroom in my house, as I've converted to an office with these times of COVID. And I forget what day it was. It was a Thursday or Friday last week. I'm sitting here and I see a PFL comes across my Twitter timeline with this statement. And I'm just like, Wayne Palmer, like, is that Lance's dad? And like, there was like no context exactly what this statement was about. And then, you know, you start doing some research and like, oh yeah, that is Lance Palmer's dad that he put out there. And the PFL statement was, we stand in solidarity with the black community, and the PFL does not condone in any way racist, if I can say that right, views. And, you know, so you start kind of doing some research into this one. So like, at this point, Daniel, I just start texting people in the industry. I'm like, hey, do you know what this is about? Because there was no context to it. How did you stumble across, this notable news item?
I mean, I just see it even afterwards on the reaction from websites, from MMA blogs that have got Lance Palmer's reaction to that post. And it's not something that I was aware of. It was a very rare instance where it's a chicken before the egg situation in these types of deals, where usually there is pressure on an organization or a team to react to a racist post or action by their employee or someone closely associated with their employees. That's usually what we're used to. And honestly, that's kind of a shame, right? Because the thought is, if there isn't an eye on what is going on, then maybe they would let it slide, which is probably what a lot of people do. And that's probably why has been and still is so much racism in the world. But this was a rare instance where you had an organization come out in front of a story before it got any publicity. And even as we speak, we don't necessarily have in front of us what the posts were that Lance's dad did do. So it's a very peculiar story because it's different than what we're used to when it comes to these types of gross stories.
Yeah, I think that's a important part of this to discuss, is that I did not see what he posted. I have just been told second and third hand of what he'd been posted. I think that PFL, to me, is handling this in the correct way. I know some people, including Lance Palmer, even I had, someone on my Twitter account, here on Tuesdays recording this show saying, and this was a tweet at me when I was talking about how we were going to talk about this on the show. And they wrote, PFL dragged the man's family into salary negotiations, unexcusable attack of man's relative. He should leave. Now, look, and I understand where that person is coming from. And I think the fact that we don't know what was exactly posted on Instagram, what we do know is what the Instagram bio of Lance Palmer said. And this is, because I screenshot it, because you never know if this is going to go away. His account was private when I looked at it. And it says, Wayne Palmer, MDM. My dick matters. Start passing out job applications and effing birth control and stop giving them welfare. That is what Wayne Palmer's Instagram bio does say. And so I think that is what we definitely know. It's out there. You know, as I was sitting here doing some prep for the show, Daniel, one of the thoughts I had about is, you know, when you see video of something, it makes things, it makes you realize the severity of what has happened. And, you know, I read, you know, the ESPN article last week. I read the piece Damon Martin did this morning on MMAfighting.com. And I sit there and my initial thought is like, if you knew exactly what Lance Palmer's father posted, how different is the reaction to this story?
I think there's a great likelihood that the reaction is pretty boldly in support of the PFL's action against Lance, in all likelihood, if we were able to see the post. I mean, that's just, and again, it's worth noting, we have not seen the post. All we're going off is the PFL's word and the biography of his dad's Instagram, which the bio, I mean, is awful. MDM, my dick matters. That is literally awful. That's what a grown man decides to put in his bio. That alone is awful. And it's a very frustrating point of view because, like, people talk about, like, people, it's just a saying like that is really upsetting because for so, you know, the movement of Black Lives Matter and what we've seen in this country is really important. And what we've seen is people kind of deflect and whatnot. And in addition to that, to really insult and be vulgar and racist. And that's something that should absolutely be called out, I think. I think society's kind of gotten a bit tired of giving people a pass for racist actions. And when you have, when you tag the PFL in a post, that's what the PFL said he did, literally drawing the eyeballs of the PFL to it. This is something that deserves to be called out. It's just a very strange situation in that we have not seen the post. So I'm giving the PFL the benefit of the doubt in the situation. There's a couple other notes to bring up on a joking matter. When I looked at the profile of Wayne Palmer, the worst part about his Instagram that isn't his bio is the fact that he has 4,003 Instagram posts. I don't understand how somebody has 4,000 Instagram posts. That's literally insane. I don't get that. That is so troublesome. That's insane behavior. But on a more serious note, the one other interesting nugget to throw in this equation is that, and even though I don't believe this is PFL's intention, there is a possibility if you're on Lance Palmer's side that you could say PFL is trying to get at him because he went out in the media and complained about wanting to get released from his contract a couple weeks ago. That's the type of evidence you would use to back Lance Palmer, but it seems like a weak case that is unrelated to that.
I understand where Lance Palmer is coming from when we're talking about the fact of, hey, I may not be able to fight for 18 months. I totally understand where he's coming from there, but there's some quotes I want to mention that Lance Palmer said to ESPN and also to MMAfighting.com. And this is from the article on ESPN.com on Friday of last week, where it says Palmer told ESPN he did not see a need for the company to comment on an account over which he has no control. He said he believed the PFL statement came as a direct result of a relationship that has been under strain for months since the PFL announced it was canceling its 2020 season because of the coronavirus pandemic. This is his quote that Palmer said. Quote, I feel like it's defamation on my character to put a post out regarding my dad when it really has nothing to do with the PFL or anything I said, Palmer told ESPN. It would be different if it were me saying something or me agreeing with something. But this makes zero sense to me, and this is just the icing on the cake for how uncooperative they've been throughout the whole process of canceling their season. Now, that was Lance Palmer on Friday to ESPN.com. Now, Daniel, one of the questions I would have in terms of that is, I wonder when he did that interview with Brett Okamoto, did he realize that his father was tagging the PFL? Now, in the article on MMAfighting.com, it notes it's only one. It could be more than one. And I would have to imagine that the PFL, they probably have screenshots of this, which magically makes me think, could the PFL decide to maybe leak that out to the media in some way or form? Now, when we talk about the quotes that he had to MMAfighting.com today, here's what he had to say. He goes, quote, "They're salty about me coming out in the media about it because none of the other fighters would, and then they post something on Friday saying they were tagged in my dad's Instagram saying that he posted something that didn't agree with. If it's not more clear than that they're reaching for something at this point, I don't know what is. One, my dad's not employed by the PFL, and two, his beliefs and thoughts aren't my beliefs and thoughts, so I know how you can tie those two together. PFL was tagged in one of his posts. I don't know which one. Ray Sefo called me and said, we have to make a statement because we're tagged in this post. And I'm like, what does this have to do with anything? The UFC gets tagged in posts every day. You never see them make a statement about somebody who has no affiliation or an employee. It's really weird. They didn't even mention me in the statement either. So everybody in the comic sections on that post is really confused and nobody really understands. I've gotten message from all the fighters. The list of people goes on and on from PFL and people who've been released from PFL, how they have my back in this whole thing. And they're glad I'm talking because not a lot of people in the PFL are saying anything. Honestly, it's only the fact that they were going to sit everybody for 18 months until Friday when they posted that statement about my dad, which has nothing to do with anything. If they're so focused on what my dad's private Instagram is saying, not even about them, this has nothing to do with them at all. I have no idea what they're trying to do at this point, but they're not focused on setting up a show, that's for sure. Honestly, at this point, with the defamation of character and slander, with that last post and all the things going on with that, I honestly just want my release so I can go somewhere else. I'm out of a job right now. I'm working. I'm not like I'm sitting at home asking for a free paycheck. But if you're going to hold me and not release me, I at least want to get paid fairly for 18 months, not 5 months. That's a slap in the face. And then he goes on in the article to talk about wanting his release. One of the things there's times, Daniel, when you read interviews that I just wish I could hear the question, the answer, and if there's any follow-up. One of my, so this is why it was prefaced to me. And this is second and third-hand information that there was anti-gay references. There was also posts that said, as it was framed to me, that his father has issues with black and brown people. It was the way it was presented to me. My thing to Lance Palmer, Daniel, is I would go to him and say, Lance, what do you say to any minority that works in the PFL that your father's always around? He's been a part of the ESPN broadcast. That would be my question to Lance Palmer, because I feel like Lance Palmer's getting some very bad advice right here.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, there's quite a few things. First and foremost, these are two different conversations to be had. On one side, I understand what Lance Palmer is saying about his contract situation with the PFL. This is a different discussion than the PFL releasing this statement about his father. You could potentially tie these two things together if you believe the PFL is acting with malice. I don't think anyone is. I'm not. I think the only people that are people in Palmer's camp. I think Lance's dad posted some awful stuff on his Instagram, but that's just my thought. I don't know. So on one hand, I have empathy for Lance when it comes to his contract situation, not getting paid that much, not being able to compete, just getting locked in your contract. I think there should be some type of, I just really feel for MMA fighters that are fighting in promotions, locked up on deals, not being able to compete during the pandemic. I have empathy for them. This is a different conversation though, and I think he's using it to deflect attention. He says things like slander and defamation of character. He's accusing the PFL of those things. That in itself might be defamation in character and slander, because that is making a false statement. He may be making a false statement that the PFL made a false statement about his father. What the PFL said might be true, and what Lance said might be false, because slander, again, is making a false statement. And if the PFL did not make a false statement that Lance's father did not do these posts, then that's not slander. That's not defamation in character. And my big question for Lance is, why hasn't him and his father gone out in front of this and shared his Instagram, shared the questionable post with the public? I think the big reason why not is because those posts are probably pretty reprehensible. And the last point I want to get into, again, while I do have, I feel bad that this is his father or not him, that's a pretty crummy situation for Lance to be in. This is still a society that we live in where your reputation is your lifeblood in this society. And it says a lot about who you are. It's important to protect it. And the people around you also are part of your identity. And if you do not disavow people in your inner circle that have some really hateful and racist thoughts that they share, if you do not do that and you are a public figure, a representative of a promotion or a brand, I believe they are within their rights to criticize you. And we've seen it in other leagues. We may not have seen it in the UFC, but we saw it in the MLS. An LA Galaxy player was released from his contract because his wife was tweeting some racist stuff following the George Floyd deal. So there is a precedent for that in other sports.
Something I just, while you were talking there, I was like, let me pull up his, see if he's deleted his Instagram. No, his Instagram's there. But his bio has now changed, Daniel. It says, if you're not a loyal person, friend, or family, I don't need you in my life. I'm a ride or die MF-er. Obviously, he said the full phrase.
How many posts does he have now?
3,998.
He had 4,003. Earlier. I have a feeling those five you deleted are probably... Get the hell out of here with this slander and defamation. I hate... That's a pet peeve of mine. I hate when people accuse others of slander when that's like a BS argument.
The thing is, when you read Lance's quotes, it doesn't come off to me as someone who's denying that these posts are out there. Now, let's move it forward, though. Let's say PFL, they say, you know what, Lance, you know what, let's just part ways. You know, let's move our in separate directions. Lance Palmer's a free agent. What's his value? Because look, PFL to me is the organization that is going to pay him the most money. You know, look, Lance Palmer at one time, he was a guy I wanted to watch. But if you've watched him over the last year or two, he's just not an exciting fighter.
Yeah. Look, Lance is incredibly talented. He's one of the top featherweights in the whole world. I mean, simply put, this guy has not lost in a very long time. All right. All he does is go out there and win these PFL featherweight tournaments. And he's been a dominant wrestler, incredible talent. He's been on the radar for a very long time. He's probably the most successful fighter in the World Series of Fighting /PFL history, I would say. I mean, he really blossomed in the PFL. He had some losses in World Series of Fighting. So he's talented from just a win-loss sporting perspective. But he hasn't really generated any buzz or momentum. He isn't a ratings draw. No one really watches PFL to watch Lance Palmer fight. He's just another guy fighting, which is a crazy hard thing to do given the amount of wins he has. But unfortunately, he just goes out there, goes the distance with a lot of top control, a lot of clinch control. And these are 5-round fights. I mean, he's only finished one fight in his last, I believe it's been his last 8 fights, and these are not against the top 15 featherweights in the world. These are more top 30, top 35 type talents, and I'm probably being generous with my assessment. So Lance Palmer's value is not great, and let's say he becomes a free agent. If he gets tagged as the dude with the racist dad, that's going to lower his value even more to a potential employer like the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking from a Bellator aspect, if you're Scott Coker, you might look at that and say, man, this guy's super talented. You know, we do have we do really love our featherweight division here. Do we want to bring that kind of attention on our promotion?
Yes, both from that perspective and also from, do you really want Lance Palmer to be your featherweight champion? You have a very, very interesting featherweight champion in Patricio Pitbull. Do you want Lance Palmer to be your champion? And a guy with that fight style, the answer would be absolutely not.
Oh, no, you're spot on with that one. Of course, you know, he's not the only fighter that has requested their release. Malky Kawa, of course, the man who runs First Round Management, you know, he came out and said that they've already requested that Justin Willis and Brandon Loughling get released from their deal. Brandon was on Twitter basically saying, look, I need to make a living, and the $1,000 a month for 5 months is not exactly what's going to cut it. By the way, speaking of Malky, calling out one championship for, quote unquote, the biggest slime balls in the biggest way on Twitter. Also, called their, one championship manager certification program BS. Yeah, Malky is 1,000% correct on that. Yeah, when you tell me Malky isn't certified to be a part of your management program, but he's certified by the NFL, yeah, your management certification thing is complete BS.
Okay, let's break this down for half a second, because it's as simple as this. You have to, like, live in Asia for it, right?
It's such BS. To me, like, when they brought it out, to me, it was a way for them to control, attempt to control what managers could manage fighters in one championship, which is complete BS. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's not a way you can attract global talent.
No. I mean, and just, you know, I mean, one championship returning, but we'll see what happens there. But Daniel, let's move on, or move back to what happened last weekend, UFC Fight Island number 3 and Bellator 242. And, you know, when we talk about UFC Fight Island number 3, Daniel, the biggest story should be about what happened in the main event, Robert Whittaker and Darren Till. Maybe whether, I know there were some people that did think Darren Till did enough to get the win, but that is by far not the biggest news story coming out of UFC Fight Island number 3. The biggest news story happened to involve the matchup that took place between Francisco Trinaldo and Ja Herbert. Ja Herbert was looking pretty good. I was feeling pretty good about my upset pick, but that did not go the way. And I want to let you hear from Herb Dean as he gives his explanation on what he saw and why he does not feel it was an early stoppage.
Bottom line now, I have to look at that match again, not looking at it to know if I should have stopped it early, because it's easy. Anyone who believes it not is maybe just following because someone with a microphone said it should have been stopped. But if you know anything about fighting, the fighter got hurt, fighters get rocked all the time, but we're looking at his actions. He's tracking his opponent. He knows where his opponent is. He's put both arms in between him and his opponent. He's lifted his leg up, head off the mat. He's doing everything I can ask for him to do to stay in that fight. So there wasn't a bad stoppage. We'll go more into that. But that person who's yelling out, that's almost the same thing as if you grab a horn and rang the horn as if you're calling the time. It can easily be mistaken for the official horn. If you open your mouth and yell the words, stop the fight, it could easily be mistaken for the people who are officially qualified to yell, stop the fight. It should never be done.
Daniel, there's some things I understand what Herb is saying there. There's some things that I'm kind of baffled by. I mean, look, I was sitting on my couch watching this fight live, and I'm just like, stop the fight, stop the fight. This guy is out. His muscles were not, it was like he was stuck. And you even see Trinaldo doesn't even want to throw a punch. He's kind of like giving that look of like, seriously, you're going to make me continue to knock this guy more unconscious? And of course, you know, then the whole Dan Hardy situation happens and all that. So let me get your take kind of on this whole thing.
Wow. I did not hear that sound from Herb Dean. And I was ready to defend Herb Dean in the sense of like, that Dan Hardy situation was bad for Dan Hardy, in my opinion. But first and foremost, I can't believe with the benefit of hindsight, Herb Dean is still defending that stoppage. Like, that was bad. That was a bad stoppage. Trinaldo knocked him out. I don't care what the dude was doing with his hand, what Jai Herbert was doing with his hands and his legs. He didn't know what he was doing with his hands and his legs. Look at the guy's eyes. He was gone. He was out of it. The fighter, Francisco Trinaldo, absolutely knew it, which is why a fighter who's been fighting his whole life, trained to be a killer inside the cage, have that killer instinct to finish the fight whenever there's an opportunity so he can put food on his table. All he cares about is getting his hand raised. And for him to stop tells me that probably Herb Dean should have stopped it too. That was a bad stoppage and it was dangerous. And I understand why Dan Hardy was emotional about it, because it was very dangerous. This dude, Herbert, could not defend himself. Earlier in the card, when Tanner Boser knocked out Rafael Pessoa, that was also a late stoppage by Herb Dean. So the fact that with hindsight, Herb is defending this stoppage makes me question whether a guy who I thought was one of the most respected officials in the game should have a reputation change. Because with the benefit of hindsight, it's important to not allow your ego and your insecurity of making mistakes get in the way, because that will get people hurt. So that's really troubling that Herb Dean does not think that was a stoppage. I want to get your thoughts on that before we get into the Dan Hardy thing, because I'm going to kind of flip my perspective there. But on this one, that's insane.
I don't know how. I mean, you know, like, yes, Herb's right there, but I don't know how you look at that and say that was not a late stoppage. I just don't know. I mean, and I've talked to various people over, you know, the last year or so, and when Herb Dean's name came up, more times than not, people will say to me, why do people think he's the best referee in the game? And I said, well, he is put in the most high-profile spot, so I think that's why it is. I mean, I was saying this earlier today, where in MMA refereeing, there's not a lot of opportunities to show that you should be working big events. It's the same core of referees every time out. There's been some bad stops just by Herb Dean. I mean, look, and people are going to have off nights. We're all human, but I don't know how. I hope that maybe, you know, obviously that audio came from when he was still in Abu Dhabi. I hope that maybe he got back here to States. He started to watch that and he started to have a thought. The person that I would want to know their thoughts on, and you're never going to hear this person come public, and that would be Mark Ratner. Because at the end of the day, this was a self-regulated event by the UFC and Mark Ratner oversees it.
Yes, yes. I mean, that is the deal. That is a long-term point of view for me, is accountability for officials and starting to realize when an official might be losing his touch. And Herb has built a reputation because for a long time, he's been a high-profile referee. And it's a very hard task to be a high-profile referee officiating basically at every UFC event and to not build a reputation as a bad official. That's a hard task to achieve. Steve Mazzucati, Mario Yamasaki, Kim Winslow were not able to do it. They had too many bad stoppages in a row. The propensity for bad officiating got them canned. They no longer work in the UFC. And Herb Dean, for the longest time, has maintained that reputation, but it's starting to feel like this might be a Joker thing, like in Batman, where it's like either die or hero, like John McCarthy, or live long enough to be the villain. Herb might be the villain now. That's a very scary thought, because like there's a lot of respect I have for Herb Dean, and even if his career ends this way, with just not holding himself accountable for poor decisions inside the octagon, that's okay. I still think he has enough goodwill with me where, you know, he's still a legend in the sport as an official. But I'm someone who calls a spade, and watching that fight, that was a dangerous stoppage. The dude couldn't defend himself. He was out and he received four more strikes from Trinaldo. So that's a deal. On the other side of the equation, Dan Hardy's actions were inexcusable. You as a commentator cannot chastise an official during an athletic event. I don't care what justification Dan Hardy put on his Instagram. And I love Dan Hardy as a commentator and an analyst. That is unacceptable, and I strongly think Dan Hardy should be suspended for a portion of time. I think he should come back, but I believe there should be a punishment because there needs to be a line between the officials of a sporting event and the broadcast team during that sporting event. It's like that in the NBA. I work the G League. The officials have a security escort. No one needs to be messing with them, and the broadcaster certainly should not be during the middle of an event.
Yeah, I totally agree with you about Dan Hardy. I think he overstepped the line there. You know, look, I think there's nothing wrong with him, you know, giving his opinion on the broadcast, but I think that when you start talking about during the event, you're confronting that official, I think that is crossing the line. But, of course, this is the MMA Report podcast. I want to let you know that this week's episode is presented by Roman. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or avoid altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it. With a healthcare professional who can prescribe real medications, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet.
Guys, with Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process, it's straightforward, it's simple and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMA Report. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMA Report and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it.
As Daniel said, go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. GetRoman.com/MMAReport. But, you know, Daniel, when you think about the other things that happened, because, I mean, were other things that happened at UFC Fight Island number 3, Robert Whittaker and Darren Till. Darren Till got off to a good start in the matchup. You know, it was a fight that where, you know, I think where when Darren Till gets in these kind of fights where he's unable to, you know, I mean, he did, you know, put Whittaker down his feet. What was that? I want to say it was the first round he put him on his butt. But when he doesn't able to do that, it's going to be tough for him to win 25-minute fights because he's just not active. You know, and I was talking about this last week on my shows on Osmo, where not only, by the way, am I doing MMA shows, you can now catch me doing MLB coverage. I'll start my NBA coverage next week, and just got a call today saying, hey, can you do the NASCAR show on Saturday? So I'll be doing NASCAR on Saturday. So if you see a lot of me over at Osmo.com. But I mentioned about heading into this fight, the most significant strikes that Darren Till had ever landed in a fight was 49. He did it on two separate occasions. In his 3-round fight against Kelvin Gastelum, he only landed 38 significant strikes. 38 significant strikes in 25 minutes of fighting, and he was a little, I think he was like around 45 to 50 range in this one as well. So I think for Darren Till going forward, to me, it's got to be about he's got to be more active than he is. On the Robert Whittaker side, I think it makes all the sense in the world. Robert Whittaker versus Jared Cannonier. If Jared Cannonier is ready to go, that's your co-main event under Adesanya and Costa.
Yeah, I mean, look, if Costa is injured, Whittaker's the replacement. But, like, Whittaker versus Cannonier is a damn good fight. Like, Robert Whittaker, to me, is clearly the number two contender for Adesanya's middleweight title following this victory. This was a great fight, man. I loved it. I loved every second of it. I thought it was really technically sound. The best part of this fight was the back and forth nature of it. I mean, Till clearly won round one, as you mentioned. He dropped Whittaker. But to end that round, you had Whittaker kind of gain that momentum. And in round two, that was a huge round for Whittaker. I mean, he dominated that. I mean, he completely outstruck it. And I think round two is the round that perfectly encapsulates what you're talking about when it comes to the lack of volume at times from Darren Till. He just completely gave that round away. He lost round three. He won round four. That was the back and forth nature. And what I loved about this fight is even round five was close till cut open Whitaker, but it was the last minute. Whitaker got the takedowns. He was just like an absolute animal. And it is of my belief that Robert Whitaker won this 25-minute fight with his very last minute of it. It was a great fight. And I'm not like saying Robert Whitaker needs a title shot right now because it wasn't like a Paulo Costa type destruction performance. But this is a former champion who beat one of the best guys in the weight class, and he certainly deserves a number one contender fight, like you mentioned, against Cannoneer.
Yeah, but I mean, look, Darren Till, he went out there and he showed that he is one of the best 185ers, of course, no longer cutting to 170 pounds. I guess Chimaev would be the next biggest topic from this event as he goes out there and just completely dominates Ryze McKee. You know, now two wins in 10 days for him, where I think the stat is he only took, I think, two or three, you know, shots in these two fights. But it's also like, you know, and I saw a tweet earlier today when Aaron Bronster talking, you know, he was like, you know, mentioning that Chimaev wasn't ranked in top 15 and, you know, kind of alluding that maybe he should be. I'm like, whoa. Pump the brakes on this. You know, uber impressive performances, but let's also note who they were against. They were against a guy in John Phillips who can't stop a takedown. I believe the stat is he has had six takedowns attempted against them, five of them gone to the ground, and when he goes to the ground, he can't get back up to his feet. So, and then, look, there's the upside is very high on Chimaev, but, you know, I hope that there's people around Chimaev that are not trying to rush this guy into a top 15 fight.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's exciting. It's fun that he took two fights and such short notice. I mean, he was a major favorite heading into this fight against McKee. McKee didn't land a single strike. Like, that's amazing. I mean, Chimaev just went out there, picked the dude up, put him on his ass, and landed some ground and pound strikes until it was over. I mean, this was domination. But Chimaev, I think in this sport, it's all about development of your skills before you reach your peak and your prime. I don't think Chimaev is there. He looks like a world beater. I know he wants to get back in there, and that's an exciting storyline for sure. But after he gets through a few performances, I think before he takes that top 15 fight, my advice to him would be to take some time out to rest and then have a proper training camp. But I think he should do that before he makes that step up in competition. He's certainly ready for a step up in competition. But a step up means like beating guys on the peripheral of the UFC roster, taking on a top 25 to 30 type talent rather than a top 15. But I mean, Jason, I mean, this card up and down was full of some very intriguing performances. I mean, not to jump around, but I guess that's exactly what I'm going to do. You know, the performance that jumped out to me the most, and I don't know if you want to say something more about Chimaev, but do you want to say something about Chimaev before I move on? Or
no, mommy, go ahead, move on, but bro.
Dude, Jesse Ronson, this guy was going to retire, and he comes in, and he fights, and he gets the win over Nicholas Dalby. He gets the finish. That performance was amazing to me. The fact that this guy's career was basically over after he had his initial UFC run. And he has a fight against Nicholas Dalby, and he drops Dalby, and he locks on the choke, and he gets the tap out. That performance really stuck out to me. It's those types of stories that I really have loved about the pandemic, is it felt like there was a lot of opportunities going out there for guys and gals who needed it. And for Jesse Ronson, for a guy who had a dream, to have that dream kind of given some more momentum, that performance, hit it on the preliminary card, was one of the things I'm still thinking about a couple days later.
Is it wrong that there's one fighter on this card that I want to talk to, and someone who lost a fight?
It's the best career.
I want to talk to Jay Collier.
Oh, what do you want to ask him?
How do you go from a middleweight to a guy who's pushing 265?
Dude, he was slower than the Tom Aspinall.
Bro, he looked like a different person.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a bad performance. I feel bad for Jay Collier. I mean, he went all the way to the United Arab Emirates And it didn't last a minute. It was a tough performance for Colin. I thought you were going to ask Betch Correa why the hell she thought the round was over when the thing clapped and Panny Kianziad hit her with a strike. That was insane.
Yeah, that's another great point. But no, Jake Collier, it's just kind of this like, man, what happened in his time away from competition to where he was? But look, great performance by Aspel. Lovely that you mentioned Jesse Ronston. You know, I mean, he's ultimately a 55 or goes up to 70 to get into UFC and gets the win. Carlos Sparza, you know, I don't know how one judge scored at 30-27. That one, that's an odd scorecard to me. You know, but I mean, just, you know, once again, weather and adversity early on in that fight, comes back, you know, to win it. What else?
Well, dude, you had Alexander Gustafsson.
Oh, yeah. That's
the one, you know, yeah. That was a bad performance at heavyweight where he landed a couple strikes. Verdum brought him down. Gustafsson defended and he got tapped out. I mean, for Gustafsson, he retired. This was his big heavyweight comeback. And to take a guy, Verdum, who's a, you know, quote unquote past his prime heavyweight up there in age, to just get finished like nothing on the ground, that's just a very bad performance that you got to wonder Gustafsson will join Little Nog in retirement.
I feel like we're on the verge of Fabricio Verdum versus Ryan Bader for the Bellator heavyweight title.
I mean, how do you not do Verdum Fedor? You got to do that first.
Well, I guess the part of that would be is, can you both get him in the same country?
That's true. So Verdum's a free agent, right? And I mean, I guess he's all full sail Bellator.
You have to imagine. It's pretty evident. I mean, he even noted, you know, mentioned about he thought it was going to be his last fight. I mean, it's pretty clear in that. I mean, you know, maybe one championship would offer him a ton of money. But you would think that, you know, Bellator, him going there, and Gustafsson, man, I don't know. I don't know if I sent you the meme or not. Someone had created a meme of Gustafsson. It was two pictures of him on the scale with his hands out, you know, that typical pose we usually see for him at 205. Then now, I mean, I think, what do you weigh, like 240? And then, I believe you told me you've never watched Sons of Anarchy, but the final image is Jax Teller on his motorcycle with the hands out, and they literally all three look like each other.
Let's see, Jax Teller. Let me see.
When you see Jax Teller, especially the older...
Oh, damn.
In the later seasons, you can see the resemblance.
Oh, dude, I can see it. I can certainly see it. Yeah, I mean, look, Gustafsson looked like he's been having a good time this quarantine. And it's tough because, God, I genuinely thought he beat John Jones in that first fight. And to go from that to this in such a short period of time... That big drop off should really, really, really reinforce how damn talented John Jones is. That within that time period, Gustafsson's here and John Jones is still there. But yeah, that was a bad performance. I mean, on the positive side, Alex Oliveira looked great against Peter Sabata. I mean, that was just a dominant striking affair. I mean, that was a 30-27 scorecard, but could have been 30-25. None of the rounds were 10-8s, but the fight itself played out where these two guys are playing different games. And so I thought that was a pretty damn good performance too.
By the way, I got to give a little hat tip to Guillermo Cruz for the headline of the week last week, as he had a story on Alex Cowboy Oliveira talking about how he needed a fight night bonus because he got to take care of his 10 kids.
10?
Yeah, 10. You heard me right. I didn't stutter. 10.
He's a cowboy, all right. Dude is 32 years old. He's 32. He's got 10 kids. Phil Rivers is like, damn. He tells Phil Rivers, those are rookie numbers. That's unbelievable. Whoa, I did not see that. Jeez Louise, he's got to get booked on another fight card.
Yeah. You know, a lot of kids. You know, we spoke about Bellator. They returned last week, and I did a post-fight show after Bellator. And one of the things I said is I thought Bellator should be commended for... I've been the Mohegan Sun countless occasions to cover Bellator event. And it looked like a completely different venue. I mean, it looked like they created a brand new venue at Mohegan Sun. It was a Mohegan Sun Arena because I talked to people in Bellator about it. I thought they did a great job. Obviously, it was an event that didn't have a lot of people interested, and the television ratings state that as those came out earlier today. 277,000 viewers in the live plus same day DVR numbers. But, you know, Sergio Pettis goes out there and, you know, clearly beats Ricky Mendejas, sets himself up to take on the winner of Patchy Mix and Juan Archuleta. Jason Jackson, solid performance by him. J.J. Wilson, Tywin Claxton, the judge who scores that fight, 30-27 for J.J. Wilson. I have no idea what fight they were watching. I really have no idea. But I would probably say that, you know what? We always talk about this guy. He's must-watch television. I think Aaron Pico, once again, is the big story of Bellator, as I think by far that was the greatest Aaron Pico we have seen in his MMA run to date.
Yeah, I think I think so. I think Aaron Pico is going to be a nice representative for the Jackson Winklejohn camp. If he sticks with that camp and he puts it together, that is that's one hell of a achievement for the Jax Wink camp. Not that they need it any more achievements. I mean, they have their fair share of them, but if they're able to right the ship that is Aaron Pico, that would be quite a nice deal, a nice tip of the cap, because he fought a really smart fight. I mean, it was a weaker opponent than we've seen before, but Aaron Pico used his wrestling base. He got him on the ground. He landed some ground and pound. He got the tap. Those are the tools that brought Aaron Pico to the Olympic Games. He's using in the MMA landscape. And the Pico Jackson Winklejohn camp looks like a nice, nice marriage. Unlike Kanye and Kim Kardashian, this one looks a bit stable. And so hopefully he stays in that camp. He continues to perform like that. Obviously, the big question for Pico after this awesome performance is how does he do against guys who have Wikipedia profiles?
The fight I mentioned, how about him versus Tywin Claxton?
That would be a good fight, man. I mean, Tywin, great prospect. The loss to Wilson was really bad for him. I think the problem for Tywin is an inability to do much with his clinch work.
Bro,
that's why he lost against Wilson.
I didn't understand his game plan. Like, I mean, yes, he's got these wrestling abilities, but why put yourself in a position where you're going to jiu-jitsu with a tremendous jiu-jitsu guy? Like, that, I didn't understand his game plan.
Yeah, it was a tough one. I mean, that was the type of fight where Claxton ended the fight with the loss, but he's certainly got to be thinking backstage that he was the better fighter. And you're right, that 30-27 scarred is bananas. But yeah, I mean, Claxton Pico, that's a nice little step up for Pico. I mean, Claxton would find himself on the B side of that equation.
Yeah, I just that was one of those I was like, man, what is he doing here? You know, in terms of a preliminary card, obviously it's about Rafion Stouts. Just great win. Hope he gets a big matchup at 135 pounds. Raz Hilton steps up on 3 days' notice and defeats Rui Sakharov. Mark Leminger gets the win against Jake Smith. Mark Leminger said that he went through three opponents in terms of this one. Of course, initially supposed to take on Logan Storley. By the way, speaking of Tywin Claxton, even though he didn't get the win, he had the line of the week last week, Daniel, on the virtual media day, where he had where prior to his virtual media day, J.J. Wilson was up, and the thing he said to us, you know, he said, he goes, hey, he's an amazing wrestler, but his jiu-jitsu is not good. And so Tywin Claxton gets asked about it, and he goes, I may be a white belt in jiu-jitsu, but I'm a black belt in whipping ass. by far the best line of the media day. Unfortunately, he doesn't get the win, but it was good to have Bellator back. And, you know, they're back next week for Bellator 243, Benson Henderson versus Michael Chandler, the rematch. The fight will be at 155 pounds. The reason I mentioned that was when they were going to fight in Japan, it was going to be at 160 pounds. Should note, I talked to Curtis Millender yesterday. So that interview will be coming up here in the next couple of days on the MMAReport.com. He's taking on Sabah Hamasi. You know, towards the end of our interview, we were talking about what could be next for him with the win here. And He basically, you know, he we talked about Lorenz Larkin, and he brought up Michael Page, which I don't know if he did this by mistake or he did it on purpose. He called him Michelle Page. So I don't know if he did that on purpose, but basically said, yeah, Michael Page doesn't want this fight. The fight's been offered to him multiple times.
Wow. That's some trash talk. That sounds pretty damn good. I get the sense that that was not a mishap there, Jason. I think that was a little bit of an insult there.
Well, he said someone else's name wrong. So I was like, okay, did he just do that on purpose? But then I think you're probably right. I think that probably was not a mishap.
Yeah, I mean Paige is the type of guy who gets the ire in guys, and there's a long line of, you know, people reporting Paige not taking fights.
Yeah, it's you know, but I mean, look, just like Aaron Pico, Michael Page is much to watch TV. But of course, UFC is back in Las Vegas this weekend for UFC Vegas number 5. Before we get to the fights, we'll let you know about our other sponsor this week, and that is DraftKings. The final 22 teams have made their way to Orlando and are ready to get back on the court. Thank God I need some basketball in my life, Daniel. While the ending to this year's basketball season will be different than years past, there will be no shortage of excitement, and there's no better place to get in all the action than DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. To celebrate the return of basketball, DraftKings will have $1 million top prizes through the first 2 days of the resumed season, so get in on all the action today. That's right. They will have two $1 million top prizes to give away this weekend.
Man, I am so excited for basketball to be back. If you haven't tried it yet, fantasy basketball is easy to play. All you got to do is just pick 8 players. You stay under the salary cap and pile up points for three-pointers, rebounds, assists, and more. There's no better way to put your basketball knowledge to the test than to compete for a shot at $1 million. $1 million. But if basketball isn't for you, don't worry. DraftKings is offering plenty of fantasy golf action for this week's tournament. With millions of dollars up for grabs this week, there is no better place to have skin in the game than with DraftKings.
Of course, you can play UFC Vegas this weekend on DraftKings as well. And download the DraftKings app now and use a promo code MMAReport to get a free shot at millions of dollars up for grabs this weekend with your first deposit. That's promo code MMAReport to get a free shot at millions of dollars with your first deposit only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. And of course, by now you probably know that I do work over at awesomeo.com, and be sure to check out all the great tools I have over at awesomeo.com. They got some great deals as part of the premium service. I will be back on Awesomeo on Thursday. I've got 2 shows on Thursday. I've got the MMA Strategy Show with Pete Rogers Jr. Also on Thursday, I will be doing the MLB Early Bird Podcast for Friday's slate of Major League Baseball. And then on Friday, I'll be a part of the MLB Live Before Lock Show. And then Saturday, I've got the NASCAR Strategy Show. I've also got the MMA Live Before Lock Show. And then on Sunday, I got another MLB show. So plenty of DFS stuff coming from me. So be sure to check out everything over there at awesomeo.com. But Daniel, UFC Vegas this weekend, you know, you've got, of course, initially supposed to be headlined by Holly Holm and Irene Aldana. Of course, that fight is not taking place. The UFC announced last week that fight was off. And Derek Brunson versus Edmin Shahbazyan is going to headline this card. Before we get into what our top 3 fights of the weekend, because I'm guessing that we may agree on 2 and not on a 3rd. We'll see how that goes. But when I look at this Brunson-Shahbazyan fight, is it wrong of me to say, is Derek Brunson starting to get the old gatekeeper label by the UFC?
I mean, it's not wrong of you to say it, because in this middleweight division, Edmin Shahbazyan is the guy on the rise. And the gatekeepers are the guys who take on the guys on the rise. And for Brunson, he was put in there with Adesanya. Before that, put in there with Whitaker. He was put in there against Ian Heinisch. So I think that's certainly the case. But with Edmund, I mean, I'm super excited for this fight card because of this fight in particular. And it's largely because of Edmund Shahbazyan, because his performance against Brad Tavares and before that against Marshman and Charles Byrd, he was fighting like a guy where it's like, damn, this is a potential championship level fighter. So this Brunson fight is a nice test. He kind of serves the role of gatekeeper. It's a harsh term, but you're not a gatekeeper if you're not talented. And I'm psyched for Edmund and Brunson.
Yeah, that is my number one fight. I got to imagine that's your number one fight, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I'll tell you right now, my number two fight is it's Vicente Luque and Randy Brown.
Okay, we're on the same page, yeah, okay.
I mean, dude, like, Vicente Luque could fight a sea otter, and it would be top three. Yeah. He is unbelievable. I mean, okay, this dude just has three fight of the nights in his last five. And the only reason why it's not four out of five is that he was fighting against Nico Price on UFC 249. That fight against Nico Price is literally, it didn't win fight of the night honors, but it's literally a top 10 fight of this year. So Vicente Luque is just unbelievably exciting. He's also pretty damn good, as is Randy Brown coming off the win over Warley Alves.
Yeah, that is definitely my number two fight. I mean, I don't know if it's in Vicente Luque's DNA to have a boring fight. We'll see if Randy Brown maybe goes to more of a, you know, try to not have a kickboxing matchup. You know, maybe use that kickboxing to set up a takedown. My number three fight, this is where I'm interested if we're going to agree or not. And my number three fight is Lando Vannetta versus Bobby Green.
We're going to disagree. I understand why that fight's exciting, but kind of explain to me why you picked Lando Green 3.
First off, Lando Vannetta, you know you're going to see some weird stuff on the feet. Bobby Green, you know Bobby Green's going to start, you know, trash talking in the middle of the fight. It's a fight that I just feel like it's just going to be, for, you know, it probably goes 15 minutes, but I feel like it's just going to be one of those 15-minute fights that you're just going to be enjoying the whole time it's on.
Yeah, I could certainly see that. I mean, Bobby Green's pretty exciting, but Lando is even more so. So I understand that, and I kind of was going to pull the trigger, but honestly, it's the co-main event for me. I think there's a pretty big gap between the top two fights and the rest of the card. Jennifer Maia is a solid talent fighter, but the fighter that makes this the number three fight is JoJo Calderwood. I mean, look, Calderwood was supposed to fight for the women's flyweight championship, and she gave up that opportunity to fight Jennifer Maia. That's insane. That is really insane when you think about it. I mean, what fighter would give up a championship fight to fight earlier? And that's why I'm interested, because, you know, JoJo is a championship level fighter, but that was an insane move by her.
I feel like when this stuff happens, more times than not, the MMA gods, they come down on you for making those decisions.
Yeah, they do, man, because, you know, Maya's a tough talent. And, yeah, I mean, maybe it's one of those deals where the championship opportunity wasn't a guarantee for Calderwood. You know, it wasn't always going to be there. But I get the feeling that wasn't the case.
This card also has three fighters who will be making their UFC debut. You've got Joseph Manis, Timur Valiyev, and Cody Durden. Cody Durden won 2 weeks ago on the regional scene, a week and a half ago, something like that. You know, gets a call up to take on Chris Gutierrez. Chris Gutierrez is supposed to fight Luke Sanders. I feel bad for Chris just because, he was looking for kind of a notable win to help him go up that 35-pound division. If Timur Valiyev, it probably is the one that interests me the most of those three. He's got a tough matchup against Jamal Emmers. I mean, Durden's got a tough matchup against Chris Gutierrez as well. He's got to watch out for those leg kicks. But I would say Timur Valiyev is probably my guy that interests me the most of the fighters making their UFC debut this week.
Oh, dude. I mean, it is Valiyev by far. I mean, that was a big-time signing by the UFC. Just a really, really really, really, you know, exemplary talent. He's not the same guy, but Joseph Manis just randomly made me think about the Michael Schiavello commentary on the guys whose name was Manis, and he kept on doing that. Not the same guy. I feel like the guy's name was spelled M Maynes. Yeah. Boston Salmon versus Danny Maynes. Look that up if you aren't familiar, but that was phenomenal. But yeah, I mean, Timur Valiyev, I mean, he was, from a pure talent level, one of the top non-UFC fighters, and they signed him. So I'm pretty excited to see him fight in the UFC. I think he's the guy to keep an eye on on this card. Overall, it's kind of a weak card, but, you know.
I'll be watching. I'll be watching on Saturday night because, well, I got nothing else to do, Daniel. So I'll be watching. By the way, definitely looking forward to the return of Dana White's Contender Series coming up on Tuesday. By the way, I've started dropping some interviews that I've done with fighters who are going to be part of the first week of the Contender Series. You can go to MMAreport.com. You see my conversation with Kevin Seiler. Second opportunity for him on the Contender Series after last year. And also talked to Dustin Jacoby. You know, a guy that you necessarily don't think for the Contender Series. We actually kind of talked about that, and he mentioned about how he was even surprised about it. He's taking on Ty Flores. Talked to Jerome Rivera. He's a 125-pound fighter who had fought Brandon Royval in the past, had a nasty arm injury in his fight against Brandon Royval. So he's got Luis Rodriguez. Also talked to Jordan Levitt, who is coming off that win in LFA. And later on this week, talking to Mikey Gonzalez. So I'll have all those interviews up on the MMAreport.com. You know, obviously Kevin Seiler, you know, after the weight issue and now back here, one of the things that, he would be the guy I would point to as him and Kenny Cross. It's a really good 155-pound fight. Kenny Cross, the lightweight champion out of Lights Out Championship. He's coming off a win against Robert Hell. Dustin Jacoby, you would think because of his, you know, his kickboxing roots that he's got the recipe to potentially go out there and win a UFC contract. Jerome Rivera at 125 pounds, you know, him and Luis Rodriguez, that's a really good matchup. Jordan Levitt against Jose Flores. The only question I have about Jordan Levitt is he is extremely talented on the ground. We have not seen what he can do on the feet. I mean, he know to me that it wasn't until like two fights ago that he actually had to throw a punch in a fight or even try to take a punch in a fight. So, yeah, he's been able to get the fight to the ground as well. So that's kind of the question there. But I'm looking forward to the Contender Series being back, which means because I just got notification that I need to update because I have a new credit card. I need to update my ESPN Plus because my year subscription just came up. So I know I got to renew that thing before Tuesday.
Yeah, you do, man. It's good to see the Contender Series back. I mean, you know, Dustin Jacoby, that's an interesting one for sure. I mean, he hasn't fought. That's the same Dustin Jacoby who was in the UFC before, yep. Right? Yeah, I mean, he hasn't fought in a long time.
He's been in Glory Kickboxing. And and so he returned last year to MMA. He took place in a one-night tournament, which it's a... You got to win three fights in one night. The first fight's an MMA fight. The second fight is the second fight was kickboxing and the final fight was boxing. And it was at heavyweight. He took it. He took like an extremely short notice. He beat Cody East in the first round of him in a MMA fight.
That's insane. I did not know that. Cody East, by the way, is a heavyweight.
It was a heavyweight like a tournament. Say he beat,
Yeah, he's a real life heavyweight.
Oh God!
What weight class is Ty Flores fight in?
Light heavyweight.
Damn! And so did he win the tournament? Did he or did he lose?
Jacoby won the tournament at heavyweight.
So he won the kickboxing match and the boxing.
Yeah,
match. That's insane. That's insane, dude. Like, also, why not? I mean, I'm sure it's like a striking, but like, do a BJJ deal. That's an interesting concept. That reminds me of Clay Collard, you know, former UFC fighters having a lot of success in his boxing career. But, Dustin's, you know, not a prospect, but he's the name who really resonated with me. But, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing which prospects really blossom and have a nice performance.
The other thing we want to mention before we get out of here this week is news came down on Tuesday. News that I heard about a week or two ago that Gary V and one of his businesses, Vayner Sports, is getting into the MMA management game. Lloyd Pearson, who is former with the Ballingy Group, he's going to headline the MMA side. A lot of the Ballingy guys, it seems like almost all the MMA fighters that were rep by Ballingy Group are going here. It's, you know, Daniel, it's going to be interesting to see how this helps fighters out. on the marketing side of things. You know, I was tweeting about this morning about, you know, when you talk about the digital media landscape world of, you know, whether, you know, can Gary V help fighters, you know, maximize what they can make outside of the UFC? Because we all know, you know, when they're fighting in the UFC, they cannot wear their sponsor logos. And, you know, one of the things I mentioned about was, you know, the way fighters have the ability to show companies that they have value and that there's a return on investment is, you know, the promo code. You hear it here on the podcast. And, you know, that's the way our advertisers know, you know, our listeners, you check them out. So it's going to be interesting. Now, I will say the only red flag to me on this is this morning I went to the Varner Sports website and there was nothing about what fighters or athletes they represent. It was all about what their agency is, and that was a little concerning to me.
Yeah, that may be the concern. But, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk is someone who's – there was a time, there was like – I feel like a lot of people go through this where they'll go through like a 3-month period where they consume a lot of his personal content. He does a lot of like marketing content on YouTube. So there was like a 3-month time where I was consuming a lot of his stuff. It was really inspiring. I feel like he does a good job, but who knows? Maybe he's just really good at projecting that he does a good job. I feel like that's probably a smart move for these athletes because it seems like these are guys who know how to market. But yeah, if these athletes aren't even on your website, that is a red flag. Overall, I think it's a positive move. Seems like they know what they're doing. They have interesting ways of going about it. MMA fighters need all the help they can get when it comes to becoming stars. So overall, I thought that was interesting that someone who I was familiar with just from watching them on YouTube got involved with several MMA fighters.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if that does help out MMA fighters, and you hope it does. You know, you hope that, you know, get around these people and they can get them in front of, you know, maybe corporations that they typically couldn't get in front of, you know, maybe underpass management teams or whatnot. So that's going to be really interesting to kind of see there. But yeah, very, you know, it was something that I probably heard about, I don't know, a week or two ago. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, it's one of those things, like when I hear about things on the management side, I'm like, okay, cool. Like I'm not one of those reporters that wants to go, hey, John Smith signed with this company or John Smith signed with that. That's not my thing. That's just not my thing.
Yeah. It's not that interesting, but I mean,
I feel, you know, maybe I'm wrong with this, Daniel, but I feel like if you are just a combat sports fan, you're not a reporter. I don't think you really care about who manages who.
Yeah, you don't. But I guess as an analyst, there are a lot of managers with big time influence in the mm-hmm. sport. So, I mean, it is relevant info to know. I mean, so it's a give and take. If I was a casual, I mean, casual people don't know these guys. It's not something that I would be interested in if I was a casual fan. But it's important, especially when we talk about, you know, it really plays a role, especially at the very tippy top of the sport. I mean, just look at the UFC lightweight division.
Yeah, yeah, it does play into that. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Be sure to check out our presenting sponsors this week, Roman and DraftKings. Go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport today. If you're approved, you'll get 15% off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And over at DraftKings, download that DraftKings app now and use a promo code MMAReport to get a free shot at the millions of dollars up for grabs this week with your first deposit. That is promo code MMAReport to get a free shot at millions of dollars with your first deposit. And of course, that is a minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Of course, we're here every Wednesday. Of course, you can always check out this podcast, Owl Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Real Animals with Captain Mike Anderson Quick Fix on Radio Influence Tampa Bay.
I'm super excited today. Talking with a good friend of mine from the beautiful city of Charleston, South Carolina. And he is Captain Ben Alderman.
A long time ago, things were, you know, it was a lot wilder because there were a lot less people. You know, Charleston has been Con Nast Traveler and all these things, like number one destination city in the country for like 5 or 6 years in a row. And we get it's just things have changed here in the past 10 years. Locals are, you know, slipping north and south, trying to get out of the, it's just things have changed a lot. Now, in this pandemic, when it was closed down in April and May, it was just like, wow, will things ever get back to normal? And all of a sudden they say, okay, you can open the islands and do short-term rentals. And I've never seen anything like this. The traffic, the people, it's twice as many people as there were before. It was like they were holding everybody back. And then they just let everybody go at once. I mean, just the traffic's twice as bad, the waiting at, you know, lines at ramps and things that we never had before. I mean, it's funny. People have gone, it's got to be the one activity that people can still do. At least here, you know, people can still fish. And there was a little time where they closed the public ramps, but it didn't last. And now it's really crazy.
The Real Animals Podcast with Captain Mike Anderson can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RITampaBay.com.